This story is told by Mrs. Burby of the East Pooscoopy District, an old-timer in the country. It's about Christmas as she remembers it as a little girl.
Well, I'd like to tell what happened long ago when kids living in the East Pooscoopy District. The heroes of my story were Jim and Sid Robertson. Now, the first to get the theme of the story, try to think of the early days of 1922 or 23 in a pioneer setting, with families living in log cabins, sod-roofed and moss-chinked and made by their own hands. And remember, this was a new territory, the land being cleared by hand with axe and brick hoe. Settlers were living off the land by hunting and trapping with little to sell. So, naturally, money was scarce those days. And what they did get was to be used for real necessities only. There was no school to stimulate social life, and the Christmases would slip by almost unnoticed. Christmas as it's known these days, with its bounty and all the goodies, was never even dreamed of. I remember once our mother got us an orange each for our Christmas treat, and another time as we sat down to our Christmas morning breakfast, she slowly walked down the table to place a few candies on our plate from the big apron pocket. We never felt deprived. We had plenty of food, good health in one cabin, and a bachelor or two to share our dinner and card games later by the light of the coal aisle lamp. Now, two of these bachelors were the Robertson brothers, Jim and Sid. They were fine fellows, veterans of the First World War. They had been born in Scotland to a very different lifestyle indeed. Not having families to provide for, their fields were producing earlier and soon had some grain to haul out for sale at the railhead of State River. This particular December, they decided they would like to give the settlers' children a real, honest-to-goodness Christmas, and spent their grain money to do just that, not out of charity or patronage, mind you, out of the goodness of their hearts. They passed the word to the parents that there would be a Christmas party in the hall and asked the mothers to get their children to contribute towards a program with recitations, songs, and so on. I wasn't very big then, but I remember getting into a hassle with a neighbor's girl over the tune of Jolly Old St. Nicholas that we were supposed to sing together. Their version differed from the one we knew, but Mother soon straightened me out. She said, "We came up here to be Canadians. Now you get in there and sing, Canadian." So when we got to the hall, there in all its glory was the first Christmas tree I can remember seeing, trimmed with tinsel and garlands and all lit up with little candles clipped onto the branches. After the program was over, Santa Claus came. That was another first for many of us, to distribute the gifts and treats and to present a pretty bread plate to each mother. I don't remember what I got off the tree, but that night Jim Robertson gave me a priceless gift, the memory of which I shall always cherish. It was my first compliment. My hair was usually being baptized into sleepy, rusty braids, but that night, Mother had combed it out and let it fall free on my shoulders. And Jim gallantly told me I was pretty. And every little monkey that I was, I really believed him. The inborn courtesy and integrity of these men always seemed to bring out the best in people. I know my young life was enriched by having known them. They're gone now, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to tell one of the stories of their good-hearted generosity and to pay tribute to the fine men and good neighbors that they were.
Thank you, Mrs. Burry.
Her home was one of the last from which the trappers left in the fall, and they were the first to see them again in the spring. Next, she will tell a story about some of these trappers.
This is a story about these trappers.
Research on the history of the peace project. In the year 1933, three men, Ben Hubbard, Frank Desler, and Joe Walton, who was one of the earliest settlers in the peace country, went into their trap lines on the Upper Wolverine in the month of October. They took along only a minimum of food and supplies, which was all they could afford that time. Matters were first further complicated by a bear raiding the food cache of Frank Desler. The men, on separating, agreed to keep track of one another on a calendar in a cabin common to all. the outer limits of their tract lines. They further agreed to meet on Christmas Day. This meant a long hike on snowshoes the day previous and a further hike on Christmas Day. After visiting and trading tales of experiences, they cooked their Christmas meal, fresh moose meat and bannock. Then nostalgia and loneliness overcame them. Miles from the settlement, separated from their families, this was not an unusual thing. Communications in that area were non-existent. Ed Hubbard, hardest hit of all because he had small children, decided to do something about it. He carefully separated wires and attached them to the cabin wall with pegs and a few precious nails, painstakingly tuning them. He had played in a small country orchestra before bringing his family to the Peace Country in the late 1920s. After some work, he played the Christmas carols and the slower, familiar tunes. Wes Harper, who bought fur in that period, recounts, an average winter's catch of fur would yield from $140 to $160, depending on the kind of fur and quality, and the current prices. Fully one half of that had to be saved for supplies, clothing, food, repairs, and snares for the following winter's work. Thus, these three men celebrated Christmas, grateful for good health, and that no accident had befallen them, in good fellowship, asking no more than they could earn, and confident in the future.
On this Christmas morning of 1974, we are about to tape the message of the Queen, beamed forth over a sorely troubled world.
Thank you. Majesty, Queen Elizabeth.